Today on The Breakdown, it's a brand new thing. It's the beginning of a trend, actually. And I'm not kidding for once. For once, I mean what I say. And that is this. Suggestors also being the players. That's right. We have a hand suggested by the man who's doing the card playing. It's pretty amazing. And it's a pretty big, interesting spot. We're heads up for a World Series bracelet. You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line. And I almost don't want to say anything. I think I'm not going to say anything. I think I'm going to stop talking right now and no more words are going to come out of my mouth, because otherwise you're going to know too much and you're going to be like, oh, he told me. And I don't want to be that guy. So I'm not going to be that guy. I'm going to be the other guy. I'm not going to say anything. I'm done talking. The words are finished. And that's how this whole show is going to go. Okay? It's going to be like incognito. Incognito. It's going to be great. But really, it's a, by the way, this hand is really cool. I mean, sometimes someone might suggest a hand of theirs and, you know, it's like, okay, just calm down, buddy. This hand is like, I'm excited to do this hand and try and figure out, is this good? Is this great? It's a big play at a big spot, but I'm not talking. That wasn't me talking. On The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Managed to do so much without talking.
Yeah.
It's really like a monk-like ability to convey your feelings and emotions without moving your mouth.
A monk-like ability.
You know, like a silent monk who can look at you and you're like, oh, they're thinking about existentialism. I get it. I can tell.
I feel like it's more of a mime-like ability.
I see. So it's more clown-like and less reverential and It's more like everybody would be okay if you died.
It's more like I'm in this glass box and you can't see it, but look, see it also. Oh my God, this umbrella, I'm holding it to the side and this wind is pulling me. It's pulling me. You know, this gust of wind.
Yeah.
It's like that.
You're just doing reverse miming now.
It's really true.
Yeah.
It feels good,
it's
actually.
It's a new art. The art for the audio age. Reverse miming.
Isn't all podcasting essentially reverse miming?
I think Joe Rogan would agree as the most popular podcaster in the world.
Is he still?
I don't know. That's
if it isn't him, who is it?
I don't know.
Howard Stern. I don't know.
Isn't he on like Sirius XM radio?
Yeah, he is. The Serial Lady.
That show's like from 10 years ago.
No, hasn't she made sequels and stuff?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Last I heard, Joe Rogan was by far the most popular.
He's done very well.
Yeah, good for him, I guess.
Yeah, who cares?
Fuck that guy.
I mean, Neil deGrasse Tyson doesn't come on our show, so how are we going to get the listens?
Can I complain about Neil deGrasse Tyson for a second?
I suppose.
I feel like he was supposed to be the cultural successor to Carl Sagan, and he has not fit the bill. He has not lived up to it.
He's the cultural successor to Bill Nye the Science Guy, bro.
I guess he's kind of a combination of
Yeah. He's the astrophysicist version of Bill Nye the Science Guy. Damn, that was awesome what I just did there.
I mean, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that, but I also feel like he's trying to position himself more as a Sagan type than a Nye type.
I think you're right.
And Sagan is clearly a more impressive person than Nye. Not to say that Bill Nye is not impressive.
Of course.
Not impressive, but
it's possible if we were really around during Sagan's heyday, we would say they're kind of the same. Like Sagan would go on talk shows and, you know, explain science stuff also. He wrote a lot of books, though.
I mean, I've seen like Carl Sagan quotes that are like, damn, that was really well thought out and well worded. And I feel like Neil deGrasse Tyson is often trying to achieve that and then not quite nailing it the same way that Sagan could.
While that is probably true, I have not, you know, given that a whole lot of investigation. I will say that on my YouTube Shorts feed, every so often, clips of Neil deGrasse Tyson come up with him explaining something for a minute. And I always watch them, and they're always really cool. They're always fascinating.
Well, good.
So, you know, it's interesting because his manner is very conversational and not like learned in the same way. I mean, the concepts are clearly learned, but his vibe is like Sagan was very much like, I'm a very smart person and it's time for you to listen. You know, and that's not the
Neil deGrasse
Tyson is more like, we're hanging out and I'm telling you a cool thing I happen to see.
Yeah. So that's the Bill Nye part of it, sort of.
Yeah. Also, just more for the people.
Yeah.
Carl Sagan was for like the intelligentsia, it feels like.
Right. But Carl Sagan didn't come across as arrogant, despite that, I would say.
did you really pay a whole lot of attention to Carl Sagan?
Not a ton.
I think he came across as pretty arrogant.
Did he?
Man.
Okay.
I think he was known in a lot of circles as that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm sure. Whatever.
Just real talk.
Real talk is that this hand actually was suggested by the protagonist of the hand.
Andres
Korn. One of the two players in the hand, but also definitely the protagonist
clearly,
of the hand.
Clearly.
So good job, Andres Korn, who is one of our most successful longtime fans. He won a 5K No Limit bracelet in 2017. That is not an easy thing to do, and he's had success since then. He was, third in the mini main event in 2019 or something like that?
He was. Also, in this, he's heads in up, the top two in
he's
this one.
Heads up in this $2,500 event.
I mean, this is serious stuff. I mean, who would, off the top of our head, who are our most successful listeners that we know of?
It
right?
depends on how you want to do the metrics. Because
Jason Kuhn.
Well, yeah.
Right. I mean, once we do those guys, we start.
Because,
that.
Like, if not counting the guys who only listen when their name's in the title.
Yeah,
how about
that? The guys who actually listen. So, Jason Kuhn is one.
Yeah. I mean, Mitch Towner.
Of course.
By money number.
I'm going to say it. Wes Cannon.
Wes Cannon is getting up there. He just won a quarter million dollars. And a lot of you who are on Discord probably thought at the beginning that we were going to talk about a Wes Cannon hand.
You would think it would be. And in fact, we plan on doing that.
Yeah.
But not today.
Right. So for those who don't know, Wesley Cannon is one of our solvers. We haven't done solver work for a while, but we might get back to it.
Well we're going
to
do it for Wesley Cannon's hand.
Yeah, and we'll tell you why in a second. Yeah. But he, in the $300 buy-in bracelet event, the Gladiators of Poker, got third place for $210,000 on a $300 buy-in very recently. From the time that we're recording this podcast. So congratulations to him.
Yeah.
There's at least one hand that he played that might be breakdown worthy. And we think he's going to be able to achieve the trifecta, he's going to hit for the cycle, whatever you want to call it.
It's clearly the trifecta.
But I like the idea of...
Yeah, I understand.
...of the cycle. It's the only good thing about baseball. He
No, it's not.
He played the hand. He can suggest the hand. I think he already did.
He has suggested that.
And he can solve the hand.
Yeah.
So Andres Korn is not going to achieve the full trifecta. He's only doing two because he's not a solver.
Yeah.
I mean, he might be, but he's not one of our solvers.
By the way, the idea of hitting for the cycle is moronic.
Of course it is.
Right. Okay. Just so we're all on the
same
page.
But it's cool.
It's cool because it's a thing, but it's a dumb thing and no one should ever try and hit for the cycle. Right.
Well, if you can get to an extra base, you should get the extra base.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So, like, you should be like, I'm not going to hit a home run because I've gotten a single, a double, and a home run. So I'm trying to hit a triple here.
Yeah.
You know, so I can say I hit for the cycle and everyone will care instead of hitting a second home run. That's stupid.
That's some Ricky Davis shit right there.
Yeah. Nice job.
Thanks.
That is sort of some Ricky Davis shit right there. He's a basketball player from back in the day, NBA player who was one rebound shy of a triple-double and shot at his own basket as time expired, missed on purpose, and got the rebound. And the NBA did not allow it as a rebound, happily. And he was thwarted in his triple-double.
Back when triple-doubles were harder to come by.
People still, though, like, teammates still do all these things where they try and make sure the other player can get their triple-doubles and stuff like that. You know, they let the guy get the rebounds. They all yell at each other when some guy gets the rebound who isn't the guy. This all, like, they go out of their way to, like, coaches design all these plays so that way you get that last assist. I mean, it's really stupid. Like, what's the point? The point of it is not that it's manufactured.
Of course.
It's real.
Tell that to James Harden. Anyway. Yeah. I know Ruthino is not happy with that comment. Big James Harden fan. Maybe the only one in the world. I don't know why anybody would be a James Harden fan. What's likable about James Harden? We don't need to get into that.
We could, but I guess we don't have to.
It's not a sports podcast. You know, we've tried those and they've failed miserably.
It's true.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Instead, let's get into freaking philosophy, shall we?
Because
not only is this a special day because this is a listener-suggested hand where the listener is playing in the hand, Andres Korn. I think we've actually done that before. I don't remember the player's name, but I think it was like a smaller thing, like an 888 poker thing.
I think we have.
At like a final table where a guy played a hand and, you know, it was like first place was like 80K or something. It wasn't a huge tournament.
I think we've
done
that. I think it has happened, but very rarely.
Yeah. But this is a special day, but also for Elon Musk because we're getting two things from Twitter, which is more than Twitter can hope for these days.
Yeah, really.
Where we're getting the suggestion from Andres Korn on Twitter. We also got a message on Twitter that we need to talk about because it's pretty good.
Do it.
And you're usually the guy who brings these up, but I noticed this first, so I'm going to do it.
Okay.
This is from Aaron Williams. I'm just going to read the whole thing.
He's a firefighter.
He might be.
Okay.
Thank you for your service. Avid, longtime listener, and so I know only you two can do justice to this topic. I was playing at my Colorado casino and had a conversation with a lunatic from, shocking, Boulder, Colorado. His mystic claim was the identity of an individual card was not determined until it was turned over. Wacko, right? But because of the parallel to Schrodinger's cat, the concept stuck with me. If a cat can be both simultaneously dead and alive, then can't a card be both a seven of diamonds and a nine of spades until it is revealed? He seemed to think one's energy could alter the actual card before it was revealed. So that part's not the Schrodinger part. Schrodinger didn't think there's energy just... crystal thing. What would Einstein say? I can't know that, so I will settle for knowing what the poker guys say. Is it theoretically true? And does it change how I should count my outs? JK. Looking forward to your sometimes quirky, probably lengthy, and always entertaining discussion. Thanks. Mm. This is exactly the type of question we like to have, Aaron.
It is a hell of a question.
Yes.
I feel like I have the answer.
Okay.
Okay. With Schrodinger's cat, the cat is in the box, right? And
there's poison in the
box. There's poison, and either the vials have been broken open and the cat has died, or the vials haven't been broken open. We don't know. And the idea is that the cat is in superposition at that point, meaning it's in both those states exist.
From your observable location.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. There is a truth, but we don't know the truth is part of the idea, right?
Yes. And the truth is one of two things. It's binary.
Right.
Which is different than the cards.
Right. So I guess question number one, I'm already feeling I have to backtrack from saying I have the answer to this now.
Yeah, that's too bad.
I'm like,
shit. I mean, Schrodinger's cat is actually a pretty complex system of thought.
Let me ask a question about Schrodinger. Do you know a lot about this? Because I know, like, you know, the pop version of Schrodinger's cat.
I think that's probably close to what I would
know. Great, let's dive in.
Yeah, I mean, we're the guys with the microphones, right?
So is part of the idea of Schrodinger's cat the idea of multiverse stuff too? Like,
I think it's more
physics and all that?
I don't know if multiverse is necessarily what it is, but it's about quantum state.
Right. So the idea is that potentially in this dimension, the cat is dead. But that does not mean but in another dimension, the cat could be alive in the box. And that's part of where the superposition comes into play.
Yeah, I think it's... The upshot for me was always that you observing the cat changed the state of the cat. It confirmed the state of the cat. And therefore... somehow that action of observation had actual agency.
Mm. That observation does have something to do with supervision, but I don't know if that works in terms of Schrodinger's cat or not. I can't speak to that. I guess once you see it, then it like solidifies in whatever.
We need a quantum physicist on the show.
I mean,
ASAP.
Get what's his face?
Bill Nye.
So I was originally going to say that, like, unlike the cat, where, like, it goes in alive and then it dies or it doesn't. The card is selected and then it just sits there. It's essentially the same card the whole time. And there's nothing, like, there is no moment where it could change. But you could argue that is the moment of selection of the card is where it gets changed, instead of my argument of, like, once it's already been selected. I'm thinking of it as, like, it's in the box and now it could be any card. No, it can't. It's whatever card went in there. But you could argue when it was selected, it could have been any card.
I think there's actually, it's not a good analogy to Schrodinger's cat, because Schrodinger's cat looks at the status of the object to be observed, whereas this question is about what is the nature of the object, right? So
yes.
The cat is always a cat,
right?
So the seven of diamonds is always a seven of diamonds. Right. It's like, is the seven of diamonds ripped in half or not?
But let me ask this.
Yeah.
What if we couldn't see what animal was being placed in the box with the poison, and it could have been a cat, it could have been a dog, it could have been a pig? Does that matter? Because now we're back. Because, like, now the cat isn't always a cat.
No, but
because it's really about is it dead or not. It's not about. I think we're really doing a great job.
I think so. I think so too.
This is not where I thought we were going to go with this. I thought we were going to do some really cool and ending, you know,
oh,
our way into
somewhere
a fun bit. And instead, we're like really trying to get into the physics of it.
Well,
as two people who aren't qualified to do
this,
we
don't force things, right? We're not going to we go where it goes.
Oh no, of course. I think the most interesting part of this is that the friend thinks.
I don't think it's a friend.
The pal, the acquaintance, the bud.
He called him a lunatic.
Yeah.
And said he had a mystic claim.
That's what you say about your friends.
Oh, okay.
His good friend. Okay,
yeah.
His friend, fine.
His husband.
thinks that, A, that the card is in play at all, and then, B, that they have some leverage over the card being
one's
in play.
Energy could alter the actual card before it was revealed.
So it's hard for me not to go to that, especially since I don't understand the physics of the other piece, and ask the lunatic why they're not the, one of the wealthiest people in the world then. Because that's all it would take, right?
Well, I would guess that the lunatic would say that everybody is doing it without realizing it.
Oh, that's such a good response by the lunatic.
Of course it is. The lunatic has this all gamed out.
So we're all...
He's been in this conversation a lot more than you have, buddy. This is his territory.
We're all. It's like a tug of war.
Yeah.
But then in theory, if we got something that a lot of people all felt very strongly about and were incentivized in one way for like the card to be... The seven of diamonds, right?
Yeah.
And only one person cared about it the other way, then in theory, we should be, that group should be able to, over time anyway, over enough iterations, have real power over the card becoming the seven of diamonds. Mm. You know, so we're going to get the seven of diamonds more often than we should.
Mystics are, by definition, loners. So,
yeah.
So they cannot form groups. That is
tough. Yeah. That's really tough. I like the idea of the constant ethereal tug of war. I'm pretty into that.
Yeah.
But then it's kind of meaningless, too, if just everyone's doing it, whether they know it or not. So, like, so what?
I guess you can't blame the dealer, then.
Does that mean that if we're alone somewhere and no one else is even... Like, I'm just by myself in my home, and I flip a coin, and I cover it up, and I'm like, I can make this heads, because right now it's in superposition between heads and tails, and no one else knows or cares about this. No one else is tugging on this coin at all. Does that mean does the lunatic think then they can make it heads more than half the time?
I would guess that would follow this line of thought.
Well, that's fucking bananas.
Yeah, of course.
And again, I would like to ask, why aren't you rich then?
Yeah.
Because that should be enough to get you there.
I'm pretty sure this person read The Secret and believed it.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing this to our attention, Aaron Williams. And what a fun game it sounds like you're in. It sounds like fun.
So when you make a big bluff on the river... Or a big bet on the river. It doesn't have to be a bluff. A value bet could be the same thing. And your opponent is trying to decide what to do. Are we in superposition? Are they in superposition there too from like call and fold?
I don't think so.
Doesn't feel like it, right? Because they haven't decided yet. It hasn't actually happened. As opposed to in the box where the cat is dead or the cat isn't dead, right? We just don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
One of two things.
It's our perception.
One of two things has happened already or not.
This goes back to the observation piece, right? Yeah. That's the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Also,
damn you, Schrodinger, twisting our brains.
Do you know what the Heisenberg uncertainty principle says? I say this without having to look this up.
No, I don't.
By changing something, by observing something, you change it.
Ah,
that's what it is. Which is what they
found. Basically the Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, I think the Schrodinger's cat is a framework to try.
It's a thought experiment about that specific thing.
I mean, Heisenberg doesn't get nearly enough credit, and fucking Breaking Bad did that dude no fucking favors, you know? Like, oh yeah, you bring up Heisenberg now, they're like, oh yeah.
Yeah, it's a meth guy.
Yeah, say my name, motherfucker. You know, that's all they're thinking, you know? Instead of, he came up with this really cool thing, which maybe is going to change everyone's lives forever. Maybe already has, as we all tug on the seven
and
of
who
diamonds.
But who cares in the end, right? Nothing means anything. Andres Korn.
Yeah, go on, Andres Korn.
Yeah, suggested this hand on Twitter.
Yes.
That's a place you can suggest. Andres Korn DM'd us. You can do that. You can just tweet at us if you want as well. You can do it on Discord. There's a link to our Discord in the old description of this podcast. Andres Korn, who, and I mean this in the most complimentary way possible.
Uh-oh.
Looks like a combination of Devilfish and Phil Locke.
Yeah, I think that is really well said.
Thank
you. Holy shit. He does look like that. He's from Buenos Aires, Argentina. But when, especially, I think in the video of the hand he just played, you know, a few days ago for this event that we're doing, he's got the dyed blonde hair, right?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't usually have that.
That's the Phil Locke part.
Exactly.
And he's also got sunglasses, but which is kind of both Devilfish and Phil Locke.
He looks a little bit like Peter Capaldi. Is that his name? The guy who was Doctor Who?
I don't know. He's like about Doctor Who.
He has one of the greatest, funniest lines in movies when he's from the movie In the Loop when he's trying to describe Star Wars, but he doesn't know what Star Wars is, and it's incredible.
Oh, I haven't. I think you've told me.
It's worth finding.
You've told me about it, but I don't remember.
Yeah. He's trying to describe this to someone who actually knows what Star Wars is, but he doesn't know, and he's like, his friend is a pedal bin. You know, the hairdresser. The space hairdresser that's Luke Skywalker. It's really good. Anyway.
All right. Thank you for the suggestion of your own hand, Andres Corn.
Yeah, this is worth doing. It was
not,
sure.
This was not hubris. It is a good hand. Yep. So let's do it.
Okay.
So we're heads up for a $2,500 No Limit Hold'em World Series of Poker bracelet. What are the payouts here?
I'm glad you asked, Grant. Everyone has already locked up $269,000, but there still is first place, $436,000. So a solid, you know, $165K, $166K left to be won. That's real.
And I think, Andres, you probably were aware that this could happen. There's a chance that we're going to shit on your place. We'll
of course.
See. We'll see what happens. We don't know.
He knows that.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right. So Korn is on the button. He's got 16.3 million as the effective stack. So it's 40 big blind effective stack.
Okay.
And he limps 10 of clubs, 7 of spades. Cool, fine, whatever.
Yeah, it's fine.
The big blind is, what is his first name? Vladimir?
I'm going to tell you right now. It's Valentino.
Valentino Konakchiev?
Sure. I'm going to call him Valentino.
Let's go with Valentino.
Yeah.
He's got 23.5 million. He's in the big blind with 8-3 of spades, and he's going to check. So we know that Andres has some success on the World Series. We don't know a ton about Konakchiev. Hendon Mob's actually down as we're doing this episode, so yes. We can't get holistic stats on people. We can know certain things. Konakchiev's had some success, right?
Coming into this event, he had, as best as I could tell, about $600,000, a little less than $600,000 in earnings.
Okay. So he could be legit. We don't really know.
Yeah. But that he could have just played a lot. And so it's really hard to have a sense of that.
It is. So 10-7 off against 8-3 of spades. $1.2 million in the pot. The flop is kind of a cooler for heads-up play. 10 of hearts, 3 of diamonds, 8 of diamonds.
I mean, that's definitely a cooler, especially with the wet-ish nature of the board, too. Yep. It feels like...
It's a very wet board, yeah, so...
Feels like, yeah, and we're, what, 40 blinds even effective here? Like, this, you know, depending on board runouts and how fast everyone wants to play their hands and all that, like, there's a lot of scenarios where Andres is fucked.
Yep. All right, 10, 3, 8, so 2 pair for Valentino. And Andres has top pair.
Yeah.
Valentino checks. What do you think?
I think it's fine to check sometimes, you know, with the intention usually of check raising on this wet board, I would think.
Yeah.
I think we want to bet sometimes. I think we want to check raise sometimes.
Yeah, I think this should probably be based on opponent tendencies. If Korn is betting a lot in this scenario, we should check. If he's not betting a lot, we should bet.
Yep. We might assume that if Korn has any calls of our check raise, they would all be hands that he's betting anyway. And so so if we bet and he folds, like, you know, those are all, he may bet some of those and all the check backs are going to be auto folds anyway. So the only way to really make any super profit here, super normal profit, would be to go for the
super
check
profit.
Raise. Super normal profit's an economic term, of course.
Sign up for our email newsletter to find out how to make super profit.
I mean, that would be awesome to have an email newsletter. I just wouldn't want to write
it. We will only share your data if it benefits us.
Yeah. Only if it pays us money, to be clear. It's only a money thing. I mean, not just money.
I mean,
if
somebody just asks for it.
Yeah, someone's just cool.
Yeah, and this seems like, I want to be friends with, like, this guy's got cool hair.
I love it. Did you see the fingernails on that guy?
Yeah, he deserves...
Give him the stuff.
Give him Wes Cannon's user data.
It's fine.
Hook him up with it. All right. So... Konakchiev does check. I'm going to start calling him Valentino because I might be saying his last name wrong.
Yeah.
Andres bets 500K into 1.2.
Seems fine.
Seems fine with me. He's got top pair. He's, you know, denying equity, going for value, all the stuff.
There's a lot of hands he can get called by for sure.
Is this a mandatory raise by Valentino?
Like, I feel like it's pretty close to a mandatory raise here.
Me too.
I guess we don't want to always 100% of the time raise anything, maybe, or almost anything, but this is
bottom
as close
two
as we can get.
On a board like this feels like the ultimate.
It feels like we should be raising this. So yeah. I can't really imagine being in this spot, getting the bet and not raising and being like, yeah, he folds a lot. That's fine. Like, he didn't have anything anyway. It was probably over, but I got to charge him. And also, this is a great board to have all the draws on and not the two pair. And so he can call me down with a lot of stuff.
Yeah. If he has a 10, which he does, like, he's going to have to call a check raise because there are so many draws.
Yep.
And if he ends up three betting me, sometimes I'm losing, but I just go with it.
Oh, we're always going with
it. You know, and we have decent equity against the range.
We block all the two pair combos.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine. And like, if he has us, he has us. Like, so be it. You know, it's heads up. We're 40 blinds deep. It's just gonna go that way sometimes. But it's not just if he has a 10. He can call check raise with an 8 or even a 3.
Yep.
You know, because if he's stabbing a lot for 500K, he's got to defend, especially on this board, right? So I don't think he's folding any pair unless he's not stabbing much when checked to on these kinds of boards. So I think it's... And also, all the million draws that he could have, he's going to not fold those either, right?
Right.
Sometimes he could put in the 3-bet with those. Sometimes he might just call. But either way, good. Until, you know, the scary cards come.
Until the bad cards come.
Well, one thing at a time.
All right. So Valentino raises to 2 million. 4X. Okay. Seems good to me.
Yeah.
I wonder if we could even go bigger.
Oh, interesting.
I wonder if 5X gets the same amount of calls out of a 10 and the same result from the draws.
I don't think we would get a different result from the draws. I think they're calling either way, 2.5 million or 2 million.
I mean, they might be 3-betting also some of the draws.
I suppose that's true. But they might be doing that either way, right? Like,
yeah.
Is half a million, one more blind essentially going to make them not 3-bet?
No. So I think I might like 5Xing it here.
Well, and what is your thought process just that you think we can get more value right now?
Yeah. And then the subsequent bets are bigger.
Yeah. It's a fairly binary spot.
Yeah.
Now, I imagine, let's just play this out even at the $2 million or 2 million chip, excuse me, raise. We make it 2 million. Let's assume we get a call. So now the pot's going to have 5.2 million in it. We bet, I'm just making this up, on a safe turn card, 4 million.
Yeah,
that
sure.
Seems like a very reasonable bet. We could bet more, but 4 million. We get called there too. Now there's 13 million in there. Yeah, we're fine. He's got less than a 1-to-1 stack to pot ratio. So at 2 million, we can still get it in very comfortably.
Right.
So that's good at least.
Yeah, it is.
But it can't be bad to go for a little extra value now. There are a lot of scare cards that could come, and we may not be able to get value later, and it's going to just check down, and we get that extra 500,000 as a result.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you can get it, you should get it, you know, if you think you can.
Right. Anyway.
It's fine, though.
Andres cannot fold.
No fucking way can he fold.
Is there any argument to be made for a 3-bet? I know it's not what I would normally do, but...
Sure.
Can we make an argument for a 3-bet with top pair bad kicker here?
I think we can at least make an argument.
Okay.
The argument would be, it's a wet board. Us having top player pair, blocks a lot of the things that is check raising for value here. Right.
The 10-8 and 10-3.
Right. Clearly, 8-3 exists. Clearly, 10-8, 10-3 exists. I guess a better 10 exists.
Not usually,
but sometimes heads up. You can get check raised with top pair, heads up at 40 blinds.
And the 10 is the non-diamond, so it could be any 10X of diamonds.
It could be, for sure. If we put in the 3-bet, what we get to do is charge slash blow away the draws, both of which are fine.
Yeah.
I guess we might... I don't think we can really get a better hand to fold, actually. I don't think 10-9, for example, if it decided to check raise, is folding, right? It's probably going with
it. I don't think 10-9 is ever check raising.
I know you wouldn't check raise 10-9, but I actually think people do sometimes check raise 10-9 in these spots.
Maybe.
I think, in fact, a lot of the solver-type players are leaning more and more on check raising top pair-type hands.
I would just imagine it's queen 10-plus if you're check raising a 10.
Well, when the board's this wet, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Let's call it queen 10. Fine. Queen 10 ain't folding if we put in the 3-bet, right? It's just going to hold on.
Probably not.
It seems crazy.
Yeah.
40 blinds deep. We didn't check raise to fold a hand that good.
Yeah.
I think, and so whatever 10 we're going with here, whatever 10, if we're putting in a 3-bet with, or sorry, we're check raising with, if it's queen 10 or if we're going down to 10-9, depending on our own personal standards, I think it's the same philosophy of, I'm not check raising top pair heads up 40 blinds deep to fucking fold on a wet board. Like, that's
probably
crazy.
Not. No.
Right? So either way, we're never going to get a better hand to fold, is my point. So now...
From Andre's perspective.
Yes, with the 10-7.
I agree. I don't expect that. It's just a question of how many better hands there are. Like, if the top pairs are actually check raising or not. Because it becomes a much more intriguing prospect if Valentino is only check raising two pair for value, because then he's draw heavy. And that makes a 3-bet a lot more enticing.
Sure. I don't disagree. The thing, of course, that makes it complicated if we just call for Andres is there's just a lot of cards we don't really know what to do with, right? Like, any diamond is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Any straightening card is a problem.
Any overcard is a little scary.
Any overcard is a problem. That's most of the deck.
Yeah.
Like, we're kind of there already. Like, if we think about all the straight draws that are here, and it could be worse because the three is far enough away from the eight. There's no straight draw there. But just all the straight draws around 10, 8, there's a bunch if we include all the gut shots and stuff like that, right? If we're including queen 9,
right,
which
right.
is very reasonable as a check raise.
Yeah.
You know, 6, 9. So basically any... any queen, jack, 9, 7, 6, all complete straights. Any diamond completes a flush. That's a bunch of the deck, and all overcards are beating us now, too, if he happened to hit one of those.
Yeah, if he has something like queen, jack.
With a diamond or not, with diamonds or not with diamonds. Like queen, four of diamonds also hits a queen sometimes, you know? It's just going to be really hard to play on the turn and feel super great about our spot, right?
So this is an argument for three betting.
This is one of the arguments for three betting, where we can get bluffed a lot.
But we do have to have some lines in our play of call down.
Yep.
And like, and you know, depending on the run out, we can fold sometimes.
Of course, you're right.
But like, it's nice to have some hands. Well, we're going to want to include some hands that are much stronger than this as well. And that if we're going to truly be balanced and not only just three bet 10-8, you know, sometimes call with hands like 10-8.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think with 10-7, mostly I would lean towards a call, having said all of this.
Me too, for sure.
Like, we're too deep to just like blow up the whole tournament because we have top pair medium kicker on a sort of wet board. It's not like it's 10, 8, 6, 3 diamonds.
Well,
you know?
Actually, this is a better board
of
to
course
three,
it is,
three bet
actually.
Than that. Because there's no made draws. There's just unmade draws.
But fine, 10, 8, 5. Sure. Well, two diamonds then,
sure.
Fine. But you know what I mean? Where there's more draws, and it's even harder to sort of navigate post-flop. We need to have a bunch of calls when he check raises. This is a great candidate for a call.
Of course, and that's why that's the standard play.
Yeah.
And that's what Andres does.
Yeah.
But I always think it's worth exploring. And I think this is actually a spot where it's close to being okay to three bet, and it might actually be okay.
I think we should probably have some three bets even with this hand. But I think we should mostly lean towards calls here.
Yeah, I agree. Pot's 5.2 million. Nitro Betting wants you to check raise yourself because you'll be so excited when you see all the cool promotions that you're just going to be like, I guess I'll just check raise myself. I got to play poker, man. You know what I'm saying?
When you say check raise yourself, some people might interpret that as sort of a self-love kind of a thing. You know what I'm saying?
Physical self-love.
Physical self-love.
Yeah.
Another
nitro
more
betting.
Technical term for
nitro
that.
Nitro betting.
Is
physical
of course masturbation.
Nitro betting. Masturbation.
They still pay us, people.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
Yeah, we're just going to try to push the edge as far as we can. Of course, there are those promotions that will lead you to perfunctory physical self-love that you just can't help because of the wonderfulness of the promotions.
You're like, wait a second, they're throwing a little extra money in that fantasy football pool.
I gotta get to the bathroom.
Is there any lotion available?
Yeah, of course. That's what happens on Nitro Betting.
Wow.
Yeah, we did that. And we're gonna keep doing stuff like that because why not? We're the poker guys and we can do whatever the hell we want.
It feels great. That's great. We're like the cat in the box right now.
Yeah,
no one knows what we are, where we are, who we are. Are we alive? What jokes are we going to make?
It's unclear. But what is clear is that if you use the link in the description when you sign up for Nitro Betting, you get access to the Poker Guys monthly tournament.
Yeah.
You get access to our special promotions. Jonathan touched on fantasy football. There's often fantasy football promotions. That is coming up around the corner.
Yeah.
Are you doing your prep work yet?
I mean, it's
are you
any
slacking?
Moment. Any moment.
Yeah,
who
are you taking at 1-1? Who are you taking?
I mean,
obviously, you're taking Laquan Treadwell. Anyway, it's time to get on Nitro Betting if you haven't before, not only because of the promotions, not only because of the casino games, not only because of the sports betting, but because it's going to enhance your life in the bedroom.
Jesus Christ!
Nitro Betting. Get on there.
I did not expect that.
And have all the fun in the world.
I'm not going to lie. You surprised me. Even though we were already talking about masturbation and the whole thing, we got a little graphic-ish. Still, I didn't think you were going there. Enhanced life in the bedroom implies, you know, maybe not you're not alone.
But you could be.
You just said enhance. By the way, that could just be
just
like...
Just imagine
these
yourself...
These 800 thread count sheets are amazing.
Just imagine yourself at sunset. The Venetian blinds are slightly open.
They're
and
looking
the,
a little naughty.
The light dapples upon your... Okay, we're going to move along. Yeah. What other podcasts do ads like this besides How Did This Get Made? Because Paul Scheer does weird stuff on How Did This Get Made ads.
Let me ask you a question. So we started doing weird ads, I don't know, 6.5 years ago, probably, yeah. Right? Like, so we were doing normal-ish ads for a little while, and then they slowly just crumbled into what they are now.
Yeah.
Is it, were you already listening to How Does This Get Made in the way he does ads?
No.
Were you inspired by that?
No.
You were not?
No, okay. I didn't start listening to that until after.
Excellent, because I would have thought, it felt like we just sort of naturally got there, but I didn't
No, he did.
Stealing.
Nope, not stealing. And he does it in a...
they stole from us.
Yes.
Paul Scheer.
Mandzukas, I thought you were better than that.
We knew you weren't.
Yeah, of course.
Love the beard, though.
How could you not?
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the hand after that raucous ad. $5.2 million in the pot.
Right, right.
10 of hearts, 3 of diamonds, 8 of diamonds.
Okay.
Andres Korn has 10-7, no diamond. And Valentino, whatever his last name is, I don't know how to pronounce it, has 8-3 for 2 pair.
Okay.
The turn is the 6 of clubs, most notably completing 7-9, the open-ended straight draw. It got there. That's not ideal for either player. Korn must love having a 7 in his hand. That's
exactly.
Nice. You know?
Like, it's a not a bad card for Korn.
Right. I mean, he picks up a straight draw and he blocks the nuts. So
yeah,
good for him.
That's pretty cool.
Konnikchiev does not like this card. I think he's probably happy it's not a diamond. He's happy for sure that it's not a 10. Those are the nightmare cards.
Yep.
Jack is not great either. Jack, Queen, those types of cards.
I mean, of all the cards in the deck, this is still like in the top half of the cards that could have come out, even though it completes 9-7.
Maybe.
I think so. There just aren't that many great cards.
Yeah. Yeah. So Konnikchiev probably still in go with it mode, even though one draw does complete and some two pairs come in, but they're random two pairs because it was limped preflop. It doesn't have
right.
to. So Korn's range is inclusive of a lot more things than the hands that you would actively choose to play at a full orbit game. Like 8-6 is not as big of a part of his range as it would be if he had chosen to play from the cutoff or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, so it's not like he has that many two pairs as a percentage of his range on this 6 versus other scenarios when
right.
the 6 comes.
And he can clearly have like a worse two pair even now. He can have 6-3 himself.
He
it's
can.
It's totally possible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all kind of the same. So you think Valentino should just keep going and try to deny as much equity as possible while trying to maximize value from a 10?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And by the way, we can still get value from an 8 also, potentially, on this board. An eight can continue to call if it wants to.
Because it's so wet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have to blow it out of the water size-wise. You know, we can... But we also want... But actually, we do want to kind of size up a little bit now that I think about that, because the board is wet and it is scary. I think we're going to have to just probably bet and sigh call if it comes down to it.
We
right,
want to make
turn.
It very uncomfortable for hands that are like naked diamond draws with nothing else going on. You know, like the queen four of diamonds is an example that you used earlier. Mm. We want that hand to have to consider folding, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. And queen jack, stuff
yeah.
like that, right? To not yeah. just like easy call.
Right.
Yeah, or whatever.
And Valentino does choose the size that you mentioned before, 4 million.
Okay, that seems fine.
4 million into 5.2 seems good.
Yeah.
Korn is once again in a spot where it feels like he can't fold. He picked up a draw. He blocks the nuts. He has top pair. It's a wet board.
His hand is too good to bluff with here, I think, really clearly, and too good to fold. So there it is. We got one move, and it's put the chips in. We got a lot of outs, by the way, right? Any 6, any 7, any 9, any chance for a cat to come in with poison and kill the other guy. I don't know.
Is that how it works? The cat comes in with poison and kills the other guy?
The cat puts Valentino in a box. Is like, no one knows. No one knows what the deal is with this dude now.
How do you like it, humans?
Yeah, that's right. You could kill a lot of us.
Yeah.
Why poison?
Yeah. Why can't it just be, is the cat drinking milk or not? Why does it have to be dead?
That's true. The milk could just be gone.
Yeah.
I mean, is milk gone or not? That's the whole game, but
right.
No.
No, it has to be you kill my
bloodthirsty
family. All right. 13.2 okay. million in the pot after Korn calls.
Yeah.
10 of hearts, 3 of diamonds, 8 of diamonds, 6 of clubs. The river is the ace of diamonds.
You know what they say about that card.
It's a bingo and it's a mingo.
It's especially a meatball.
That was perfect Italian.
Thank you. I saw Mario.
Did you work in an Italian restaurant too?
I worked and there was an Italian restaurant. And so.
So Schrodinger's cat, you know? All right.
Everyone gets it. Okay, so you know that's one of the cards that's like, okay, now what, right?
All right, so this sucks for Valentino. Being out of position sucks.
Yeah.
The effective stack is 9.9 million with 13.2 in there, which is okay. We could consider shoving, but I don't think there's really any reason to shove at this point because Korn's just going to fold a naked 10 now on this card.
1,000,000%.
And we'd have to have him have 6-3 really in order to get paid if we shoved.
I mean, 6-3 and a naked 10 play the same.
They do,
like
but
say but one Korn's is stronger.
He's gonna you know draw the line somewhere as far as calls and folds.
Understood, but I don't even. I'm not sure if we're getting called by a 6-3 because what can 6-3 beat? It can beat the straight. It can beat a few straight draws.
Yeah,
and it can beat a 10 that is now losing its mind when it doesn't need to on the river, right?
Yep.
So I don't know if 6-3 is even a call. If a 10 is a fold, I think 6-3 is probably a fold too. Like, unless we have a diamond in with our 6-3, which if we have the six of diamonds in our hand, I guess we're calling, but that would be the way.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly agree with you. So the point is, if we shove, we're only getting called by better hands.
I mean, I guess if 10X is there and it also has a diamond in it, because there's not the 10 of diamonds on the board, right?
Yep.
Maybe we get called sometimes, but it's dicey, and he may just find a fold anyway. He's like, well, what the fuck were you check raising me with that I can beat now? Just a straight draw.
Very dicey.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is just a shit spot, though, because if you check, how do you proceed? You just check and hope he checks back? If he moves in, what do?
I'm not sure what you do if he moves in. You're really unhappy about it. How often does he really have diamonds?
Like, I guess we have to ask ourselves, would he call the turn with a naked diamond draw, or would it have to have something going on with it, like be a 10 with diamonds or a combo draw, or would he do it with queen 4 of diamonds?
He might do it with overs and diamonds, but that means he had to limp with those. Now, maybe he's limping everything, but...
It's just less likely.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's probably got some raises pre-flop there, right? Also, diamonds might have 3-bet the flop. Be like, let's fucking go. Or raise the turn, even. Not just call the turn when we bet 4 million. There's a lot of ways. It's not that there are zero combos of diamonds here by any means, but there aren't huge amounts.
I think the 10X of diamonds makes the most sense because it has showdown value. So it doesn't feel the need to 3-bet the flop. Mm. Whereas like a combo draw will 3-bet the flop with some regularity. And if he didn't have a combo draw, if he just had the naked diamond draw, he might have folded the turn. But the 10X of diamonds makes sense the whole way through.
Yeah. I agree. The 10X of diamonds certainly could be there. That would be a problem. So what's our plan? So what should we do? So if we were to bet, it's hard to get called by worse, right?
If we were to shove, which is the normal bet.
Right, right, because it's a 1-to-1. So that seems like not a great move to shove.
Oh, it's actually it's like a 3-to-4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for being so fucking anal about that.
It's different. It's a game of math.
No, of course you're right. You fucker. So shoving doesn't seem like a great idea unless we think Andras Korn is going to hero us a lot. If he's seen us do lots of bluffs on scary boards, if we've seen him do lots of heroing, maybe we could shove for value, especially because the stack to pot is small enough where we feel like we may have to call a shove anyway. So like if the shove for value is actually can get called by worse with some frequency, a shove can't be that bad.
Yeah, I would not expect that though.
I wouldn't either. When the ace of diamonds comes in, it just seems like...
I think this is just terrible. A shit spot that we have to check and figure it out if he moves in. And hope hope he checks back and just be thrilled if he does.
Right. If we check, we can still keep bluffs alive, the straight draws. Or it's hard to come up with something else other than a straight draw.
It's hard
draw.
To imagine him having a straight draw. Called 4 million on the turn.
He could have like the...
It has to be exactly jack 9.
Can he have a 6X straight draw? He can have like 6-9 or 6-7, maybe? 6-9. 6-9 is the one that plays the best of those, maybe. He could have that. So he has a pair on the turn, has a gut shot. It's not wildly different from the hand he actually has. Obviously, top pair is way better, but considering what's being represented by Valentino, they play relatively similar.
Do you think he's calling the check raise with 6-9 on the flop? I mean, a 7 is a straight, but like jack 9 is a hand that Valentino could definitely have.
He could. I mean, we're heads up and it was an unraised pot. He could just have so many hands.
Yeah, but jack 9 is just a small concern among the bigger concern that we're calling a 4X check raise with a bad gut shot on a board with two diamonds.
You make a fair point. You may just be right. I don't know. I definitely feel like I see players make this call sometimes. I don't know if it's good when they do. Right. I often wonder if it's good to make this kind of a call. So I don't know if he can have it or not. Maybe he can't have 6'9". Yeah. So, okay. So we can... So shoving seems bad.
Yeah.
Let's not do that.
Okay.
Our other two options are to check...
Yep.
Or to bet less than the full amount. Those are the only two options left. Yeah. Okay, let's examine those. Betting less than the full amount can work if one assumption has to be very strongly in play to bet less than the full amount, right? And it would be that we can't get bluff shoved on.
Yes.
Right. I remember back in the day, I used to teach this to my coaching students that who would like be in these spots on the river where they'd have like kings. And a scare car would come, or a car would come that wasn't great, and they weren't sure what to do, and they would end up like check calling some huge amount because they have like overpairs, and they're just not clear what to do at all. And I'd be like, no, what you should do is bet small, because you can get called by worse this way because it's cheap enough. And if they raise you, this has to be someone who is unlikely to raise you as a bluff, of course.
Right.
But at the stakes we were playing, we talked about that. Like most of the time, that was the case.
Yeah.
Like it's like the perfect play, essentially. You get called a lot more, and when they raise, you can comfortably fold and not put all your chips in. You only lose a little bit of chips. It's like incredible. And that play was something that I executed against a bunch of players and a bunch of my students did, and it was great. To the point where I think even you called it the Levy play there for a while, right? So that play could work here. Does Korn have like a lot of bluff shoves? Because if we bet tiny, can we get called by worse? And also essentially play perfectly and not have to pay off the full shove as opposed to if we check and he just shoves. Can we do that? Maybe that's better than check calling.
I don't know if you jumped the gun there.
Do
we have to call if we check and he shoves?
Great question. I don't know.
It's a really bad card. I mean, if Korn
really bad
has a 10 like he does and we check. My guess is he's just going to tap the table and hope he's good.
Why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
He's tapping the table for most of his made hands.
Right. So that means that we can probably fold if we check and he shoves.
I mean, all we can beat is essentially like Queen Jack with the Queen of Diamonds or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Like, or Jack Nine with the Jack of Diamonds or whatever.
I think Queen Jack with the Queen of Diamonds is folding the turn.
Yeah, that's why I changed it to Jack Nine with the Jack of Diamonds. Even that could fold the turn, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is or not, but actually, considering how deep we are, it might.
Yeah.
God, this is it. So if there aren't any straight draws, except straight draws that have a pair in them, that's interesting too now, right? So now we're talking like 9-8.
Yeah.
But we're beating 9-8, and why would 9-8 bluff?
Yeah, because the draws that missed could be just giving up, and you could tap the table and win, and you don't want to risk your entire tournament.
It seems weird to turn 9-8 into a bluff where we've got... second pair, right?
Yeah.
Or third pair now, but whatever. I mean, we all know the feeling when like you're hanging on there on the turn and the guy bets and you call in position and then the scare card comes and you're like, oh, fucking motherfucker.
Yeah, I know.
And then they check and you're just like, check back right away. Like, do I win? Do I win? I might win.
Please let me win.
Yeah, I really don't want to. I'm so happy to put zero chips in.
So I think my preferred play, unless there's something about Korn that I don't know, is to check and fold if he shoves and really just hope for the check back.
Yeah.
I think that's my preferred play.
I think that's mine too, because it feels like we're going to get a lot of checkbacks, and diamonds are going to shove. Straight draws may not exist. The straight draws that have a pair that could call the turn probably are going to check back anyway. Probably, hopefully, unless this guy is, you know, Super Saiyan. You know, he goes Super Saiyan. It's like a video game thing.
I don't know anything about this.
You get all big
anyway,
and dangerous.
Valentino chooses the third path.
Yeah, he goes for the Levy play.
He bets $3 million into $13.2 million. Korn has $9.9 total.
I mean...
He thinks he can play perfectly.
This is like setting... I mean, considering the hand that Korn has, this might be the ideal perfect spot, right? Like, what's Korn going to do with a 10 now? Like,
fold.
Is he going to fold for $3 million?
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you? How are you ever ahead?
Well, when he only bets $3 million, I would need... I can only... What can I beat? I can beat a worse 10 that check raised and went bet.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
That's all I can beat.
And then bet $3 million on the river.
Yeah, bet. Yeah.
Why would they bet $3 million on the river with that hand?
Nope. I got nothing. I cannot come up with a reason why they'd bet $3 million on the river. So I guess you're right. I guess if we really think about it, the ranges all shrink up in all the wrong places, right?
Yeah.
All we can beat is a straight draw bluff now. Like, Jesus. And again, I mean, he can have the straight draw bluffs, right?
Yeah.
Valentino can.
But he probably isn't going to bet $3 million with them. Most players don't have that play. Yeah. They're going for the whole thing, or they're not. They're not continuing the bluff.
It's really weird to bet $3 million as a bluff here, right? Yeah. Really, really unusual.
Maybe Valentino is good enough and balanced enough that he has bluffs here, but I don't know. Based on the hand that he has, it looks like he's playing his hand kind of face up.
It sure does, Grant. It sure does. You know who else thinks that?
Andres Korn.
Thinks
who moves in rapidly. Pretty quickly moves in for $9.9 million over $3 million. It's $6.9 million to win $23 million.
That's fucking cool, man. It's yeah. 3.5 to 1.
So this is pure
and
exploit.
Also the bracelet, by the way.
Yeah.
To be clear, you also win the bracelet if you make this call.
This is pure exploit.
Yes.
Andres Korn, who is listening right now, believes that Valentino would have moved in with a flush, believes that Valentino has a lot of the time a better hand than a 10, but does not like the ace of diamonds and is trying to make the love you play
yes.
and play perfectly.
That's right.
And Andres Korn is like, I'm fucking Devilfish and Phil Locke combined. You cannot do this shit to me. Go to hell.
My guess is Andres Korn has seen Valentino make this play
yeah.
at this table or in the preceding few tables and knows that it's what it looks like, at least with a high frequency.
Now, to be fair, because this is a badass move and it works, Valentino folds. From a theoretical perspective, you really want to have a diamond in your hand if you make this move.
So nice to have a diamond, yeah. but we do have a seven.
Yeah,
least.
We block 7-9. That's nice.
So, because a straight might bet $3 million also here,
yeah.
right? But a straight probably is going to call if we shove, right?
It's
probably just going to feel like it has to call.
Right.
It's like just too good.
I guess if you're Korn and you believe that, we're doing a lot of assumptions now,
yep.
but that Valentino would shove all of his diamonds, but all of his weaker value hands are going to bet $3 million, then blocking the one that is probably going to call is more valuable than blocking a diamond.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Assuming that's true.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting because, of course, Valentino, there's such an easy response to this, not in the moment, which is just to also bet $3 million with your flushes sometimes against
yeah.
guys like this, right? But the problem is you don't get to play enough hands against Andres Korn.
How often are you going to be heads up against Andres Korn for
in
a bracelet?
In the spot, yeah. you know, this deep where the diamond comes on the river and you know, this isn't like your cash game where you get to see this guy regularly or, you know, you keep seeing him in the same tournaments
right.
all the time. You just don't get to replicate this. You get to do it against guys like him, maybe, but it's not exactly the same because even most guys aren't going to make this play. Most people just aren't going to make this play, even the really good players. Like David Peters, I don't think is shoving very often here unless he's seen Valentino bet for this much and always have what it looks like he has here.
It's always
a blocking, I'm folding bet.
It's honestly quite a badass play
yeah.
by Korn, and it is recognition of the situation where his opponent is trying to exploit him. And he's like, I'm sorry, I'm the exploiter, buddy.
Exactly.
Like, there's nothing you can do about this. Like, you can call, but I don't think you're gonna.
It's pretty interesting, too, because it sets up this thing for Korn where, okay, if he's wrong and gets called, it's over, which
yeah.
is pretty terrible. But if he's right and gets the fold here, he's now picked up 7, 8, 9 million chips and now has 20... He's now the chip leader by a reason. They've like switched positions, basically.
Right, versus folding and having 9.9 million.
Right. I mean, holy shit, that's incredible.
It's a big deal, and it's also recognition that once your head's up, there's no ICM. Your tournament life
right.
no longer has value in
that's
the same
right.
way.
That's right. And when the guy bets that little, you so plausibly can have diamonds here, right?
Of course.
So plausibly. You're calling the turn, I think, if... Maybe the naked diamond draw, maybe not, but diamond draw with anything else going on, you're calling the turn.
Yeah.
Right?
And
maybe even with your naked diamond draw sometimes against certain opponents, right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh,
that's pretty interesting. I mean, you could have a diamond draw with just the nine of diamonds or the seven diamonds in your hand, block the nuts on the turn and be like, so if the diamond doesn't come, I've got a good spot too where
yeah.
I can make a play at it, you know, if given the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, when exploit goes wrong.
It's so interesting where you're trying to like hit these super thin edges. By the way, we always talk about the play. This is kind of the play.
Yeah, this is kind of the play.
Right? Like, I mean, the play would be to have 6 million and do this, not 9.9, right? That's really the play. 5 million.
Yeah.
It's 2 million more and he folds. But this is still the play. Like, the price we're giving him, this setup, this feels like the play.
It's also really cool because very hard to construct a bluffing range from Valentino's perspective.
Agreed.
It has to be a 10 turning into a bluff.
It seems like it has to be a 10 turning into a bluff here. Yes. I don't know what else it is.
And you just really wouldn't expect that from most players.
Right. I mean, if I was sitting there in Valentino's shoes, I would be like, I don't know anything that's not value here. Like, how can he move in without having it? He just always has to have it.
Yeah.
He has to. It's a guarantee. And I would be wrong. The cat would be dead.
Yep.
Or the milk would be drunk.
Yeah.
By the
thank
dead
you.
Cat.
Thank you. Oh.
The cat will have drunk the dead milk. In certain dimensions, it's possible, Grant.
The dead milk?
The dead milk will be drunk by the cat. Oh, you want the cat to be dead instead? You animal. Animal.
All right. Good job, Andres. Although,
yeah.
Sorry that you got second anyway.
Yeah, ended up winning that Valentino still did the thing.
It was probably a good time to end the podcast.
No. I got one more thing to say. So we were talking yesterday to guy who works at an agency and was asking us all about our process for the podcast. And we were trying to explain to him how we really don't do any editing. Yeah. And it was hard for him to understand.
Yes.
Right? Because no one really gets it if they don't listen to the show that really we don't edit the show. Uh-huh. So he was like, even after we explained it all to him, I think multiple times, like more than at least twice, you know, over the course of an hour talking about other things too, to be fair. He at one point said, so you do like an hour and a half and you cut it down to an hour? And we're like, oh, no. Like I misspeak and Grant just points it out and we keep going. That's the thing. We embrace the mess. He's like, oh. So there you go, Mr. Highfalutin Advertising Dude.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
Yeah, take that.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Stick that in your Reese's Pieces.
Hey. First time, no rehearsal. I say fuck the second take. Night is baby scratching on vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second dates. I'm the rapper.